There seems to be an endless sea of internet content on how to recognize the narcissist within romantic relationship and family dynamics. The content focuses on the vilification of the narcissist and how anyone who comes into contact with them is a victim. But there is rarely, if ever, a perspective that acknowledges the potential strengths of this, quote, personality disorder. I also don't find anyone speaking on the collective or mass scale narcissism that drives some of our world's most powerful forces and industries. You've also most likely come across the buzz terms father wound or mother wound. What does that even mean? And if we have those wounds, are we broken for life? If you know me, you know I believe there is always an opportunity for alchemy and transformation, no matter where we find ourselves. When it comes to, quote, doing the work of healing, so many of us can bypass the process when we are really called to walk into that alchemical fire. I get it. It's super uncomfortable, and many of us say, what's the point? I've made it this far in life just fine. No need to relive my trauma. However, what if life isn't working out for you? What if your illness is driving your life? What if there's a pattern of unhealthy relationships, standoffs with family members, one dead-end job after another, or unfinished projects? Or what if you live with a deep sense of an infinite, insatiable void within you? This might mean your unresolved trauma is most likely behind the wheel. As my friend R.C. Blake says, choose your pain. The extended pain of staying the same, living a life stuck in a pattern of illness, survival, and stress, or the temporary pain, followed by sweet bliss, of walking into that fire, healing, confronting that which wounded us, and transforming into the most upgraded, expanded, and tranquil version of ourselves. In today's episode, I am chatting with Essin Anwar, a relationship and personal transformation coach who has worked with hundreds of individuals and couples committed to personal pattern disruption and the cultivation of deeper emotional intelligence in order to expand into a more healed, fulfilled, and peaceful quality of life. This conversation hits me on a deeply personal level, and I am so excited for you to be here. I would love to hear what you gleaned from this beautiful conversation. Please drop your comments and reflections on whichever platform you're listening. Hi, Essin. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me, Ayla.
I came across your work about 6 months ago. I lead doula trainings, and so I was doing some research in different exercises for reconnecting with our inner boy or girl, right? Because so much of holding space for other women in this work requires accountability. And so, in researching accountability, understanding what that means, I came across this, one of your videos. And it was really compelling to me because, the way that you deliver this information, it feels so matter of fact. It feels so accessible, right? That I can change. I've been told I'm a certain way. I feel that I'm like at the bottom of the barrel. I'm not really sure what to do when it comes to expanding into a new version of myself. But you offer what I feel to be really comprehensive steps and concepts, kind of like these bite-sized concepts of how to connect with what our needs are. Because when we can access that inner boy or that inner girl, so much becomes available to us. The way that I've always seen it is like when we're walking around in this adult body, right? So much of our actions can be driven by our inner child's unmet needs. And sometimes that can be destructive. Sometimes we wonder why we're doing certain things, and maybe it doesn't feel good or feels like we want to break out of that pattern. And so I really just loved what you had to say, and I wanted to have this conversation with you and explore how we step out of what I would say is maybe an unconscious victim state, where we feel like I want my life to be better, but there's nothing I can do about it, or this is just
the hand I've been dealt, and that's it. And, you know, I'll just continue living this way because, you know, to do the work or to change is maybe more painful than the status quo. A lot of the women in my membership feel like they've been elevating, expanding, and maybe their partner hasn't been up-leveling with them, and they feel concerned, you know, or they feel worried about what could come if they continue to expand and move forward in new directions in their life. And what if he's like not coming with me? So could you share a little bit about how you initiated yourself into this work?
I think like many people who dive into the spiritual path or the healing path, it's just terrible suffering that drove me that way. I was a hot-blooded young man, and I had a lot of energy to use. And when you have a lot of energy, a lot of testosterone, a lot of trauma, like many men that you would describe as alpha, your dream is just to be the best at something. I wanted to be the best fighter. I wanted to be the best boxer. But I knew that inside something is not quite right. I always had a lot of heart palpitations, nightmares every night, sweating hands, sweating body, overthinking everything. Wherever I go, I'm thinking, who's a threat to me? Who's a friend? Who's not a friend? Who's an enemy? Just super insecure. And I got tired of it. And I have to give my father credit because he had this wonderful bookshelf at home full of self-help books. And on there were many books that got me into it. One of the most pivotal was The Power of Now. And I just sat down in my bedroom. And what really turned my life around is when I learned to totally silence my mind. And I mean crisp silence. And that serenity, that deep peace that I touched that day, it changed me for life. I think that was about 8 years ago in my bedroom. I learned to have total fulfillment and happiness sat down on a carpet staring at a wall. So I was like, okay, I'm onto something here. Because before that, it was always the next thing, the next girl, the next goal, the next fight to win, the next something, you know, very much that conqueror, wounded mindset of the man. So that was the turning point for me. And ever since then, I just went deeper and deeper into that. And my life changed beyond all imagination. Freakishly good things started happening. And here I am now with a platform on Instagram, and really, really thankful to be able to help many couples, men, women of all ages, backgrounds, to heal in the same way.
Something that stood out to me just now was wondering, when you said you felt this sense of deep fulfillment, like what did that feel like in your system, in your body? Like how could someone identify that?
I can feel it now. I'm just looking out of the window up at the sky, but even if I'm looking at a wall in my bedroom, what it feels like is that if life were to end now, nothing is missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like everything is here and now, and it's just deeply safe. It's a sense of emptiness, which is also full at the same time. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, David Data talks about that the masculine wants to access this deep sense of emptiness, and that's when they're at the most peace. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he described, yeah.
I didn't know he had that line actually, but I have read his book, The Way of the Superior Man. Yeah.
Yes, such a great book. I love his teachings. He has all these free clips on his website, you know, 5 minutes, 3 minutes here and there. And there's these beautiful nuggets to reflect on, you know, and he does talk about the masculine being on this search finally in his third stage of accessing that deep emptiness. But in that emptiness, he's also able to offer a lot. So it's kind of what you said about feeling completely empty and feel full at the same time, because I do work with a lot of couples. There have been men who've expressed that feeling of that conqueror, like you said, that was it the phrase wounded conqueror? Is that what you used?
Yeah, I've never heard it before said like that, but anyone who wants to be a conqueror, well, you're always coming from a wound anyway. I mean, conquering is not anything good. Because
right,
in order to conquer, there must be a conquered. you're oppressing, or, you know, somebody gets oppressed.
Right. So that means it's violent because it's non-consensual, maybe. So could there be an acquiring, an acquisition made based on consent that feels fulfilling and good for everyone rather than a conquering of?
I would say that acquiring is not the best word, because it's pretty much like a commercialized word of where I've got to now on my journey personally. I don't really distinguish between myself and others, meaning we all are really one energy. This body that I'm in is just air and water and soil that can think. And when you get to an embodied place where you actually see others as yourself, and the land and the air, it's all one, there's not really no such thing as acquiring or conquering or taking what's mine anymore. With all these things which are really part of the American dream. But that doesn't mean, okay, what do you do in your life now? Are you just passive? Do you roll over? No. For me personally, what I want is everybody to have that fulfillment, everybody to have that embodied sense of oneness. So if you want to use the word acquiring for that, that's okay. I would call it an expansion. Yeah, expanding the consciousness in others, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, this is how we lived way, way, way back when. We actually weren't taking more than we needed, and we were always replenishing the resource from which we were consuming. So, you know, there was a big reverence and respect for nature in that sense, for each other.
Yes.
From what I've heard, right? I wouldn't know that now, because we live in a society that's based on consumerism to fill the void, you know. And so it's a long forgotten way of being. We have to work really hard, I would say, to get there in our own personal experience day to day, hour by hour. And so it's not so much in the collective consciousness, but I think we all have that memory on a cellular or soul level, perhaps.
Yes. And it's not always, if it's not a memory, it's a natural path of expansion. Because what happens is, as you heal the wounds from whatever void, from your mother wound or father wound or whatever childhood neglect, and you realize, okay, there's no amount of money or sex or clothes or fashion statements or new haircuts or PhDs that's going to make me finally feel enough. That's when you turn inward. And when you feel that silence that's fulfilling, you recognize that it's actually very pervasive. It's a field that travels into everyone and everything. And at that point, it's not so much remembering something, but expanding into something new. And that I'm getting deeper onto that path every day. And I absolutely love it. It's all I want to do every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like a homecoming in a sense to, yes, something that is safe. Like you'd said when you were staring out at the sky, right? It's like you feel safety in your body. And so one of my questions, actually, I was going to be for later on, but it has to do with that, because for me, relationships are mirror work all the time. Any kind of relationship with my daughter, you know, friendships, romantic relationship, parents, it's just mirror work all the time. That's how I view it. And I've encountered people who say, like, I, you know, what's the point of doing the work, right? Like, what am I going to get from this, you know? And I always say a sense of deep peace and safety in your body, you know, like, that's what I'm working toward. That's what I want my daughter to experience and to be able to access no matter what type of situation she's in. What would you say is the purpose of doing the work? Like, how can someone actually tap into that purpose to see, like, this is the point of it, you know? Because a lot of people will jump from relationship to relationship when it gets challenging. And I know that's a whole conversation as to deciding what's work and what's abuse, maybe, right? You know, some people say this is really challenging. And then there's a fine line where it becomes, you know, toxic and abusive, perhaps. But what is the purpose of doing the work and conquering the fears and expanding?
We've talked about peace already, and inner peace that is actually consistently there through the day. I still get triggered here and there, but I always tell this to my clients on a stress scale of 0 to 10. I'm typically, when it comes to just business work issues, I'm typically a 0 to 1 all day, 7 days a week, no matter what happens in the business, no matter if a client pulls out or anything. And that's something I'm very, very proud of. Here and there, it'll go up. Relationships are a place that still do trigger me. But that's one of the main factors, that your stress level on average, I believe it should be below a 3 for everyone, where 10 is most extreme. So that means your body is not in fight or flight, even when things go wrong, right? And that's a beautiful thing. And then when your body is not in fight or flight mode, what happens is you're more sensitive to the life around you. You can feel the beauty of life. And when you can feel the beauty of life, when you can feel that pervasive peace and the aliveness of the air and the water and the sky and how beautiful this life is, that's that fulfillment I was speaking about earlier. So you get fulfillment. And you mentioned people say, what's the point of this? Well, through my Instagram, a lot of people sign up through the programs. People don't really, if I just talk about peace and fulfillment, it doesn't grab most people's attention. It almost sounds hippie or too woo-woo or spiritual. What pulls people in from my Instagram is the hardcore, like a man with a mother wound can't emotionally provide for his woman because he wants her to mother him. So he is too busy taking and taking and then getting angry and defensive when she asks for emotional nurturing in return. And now I have streams of men booking calls with me, breaking down in tears, just wild. They've been married for 29, 37, 40 years, and they're just sobbing with me, saying that, oh my God, your videos hit me like a punch in the gut because every word you described is me. So all those years they've been in that anger and unhappiness and non-peace, non-fulfillment. But if I were to come up to them and say, hey, you need peace in your life, they'd be like, what are you talking about? I have it. I have the wife. I have the kids. I have the Ferrari. Who are you? But what they needed to hear is anger, defensiveness, volatility, those things. So people tend to respond to pain rather than just a promise of peace. So when the pain is high enough and, you know, women are developing all these diseases that a growing body of research is now saying is just really coming from unhealed trauma and psychological ailments, not just some bodily disease. Same is happening with men. When they realize my body's breaking down, I'm not happy, that's the language they need to hear. That, are you unhappy? Are you burnt out? Are you just fed up with life? Those are the things that usually pull people in.
Yeah, they identify with those pain points, basically, you know, and sometimes it is like that simple formula that you mentioned, you know, just, you know, illustrating the mother wound, I guess, right? And then they can identify with that. But it's, yeah, it's the same thing too, I guess, in my line of work, where it's like, do you want to have this type of amazing birth experience? And it's like, yeah, but we get more connection when we talk about the ways in which things are feeling really challenging and frustrating right now. Sometimes we can't identify with the peace and the bliss until we first get through identifying with those pain points.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like if I said to a fish, hey, you're very wet right now. And the fish says to me, wet? What are you talking about? Like, it's in the ocean, but it doesn't know that it's surrounded by water because that's all it's ever known. So every person, there has to be some sense of awareness that comes in that says, what you think is normal right now and what you think is happiness and success is actually deep suffering. And when they realize that, oh my God, it really tears them apart. And that's when the awakening comes, yeah.
Yeah, it does. They realize they've just been adapting the whole time, you know, and masking, like you said, physical ailments, disease, chronic pain, whatever it is, just finding a way to adapt to it. But for those listening who might not know this, or maybe they're new to this, I feel like it's in the zeitgeist, and it has been, but how would you describe the way that the father wound would play out for a man and would play out for a woman?
Yeah, father wound is definitely a broad umbrella term. So I'll start with the most common ways that I personally work with, and those ways that have gone very viral online, when I talk about them. So I'm seeing just how common they are through humanity. The father wound in men is something super deep. I'll start very simple. It's the man who wants to be the winner, the alpha, the strong breadwinner, and nothing wrong with wanting to be the breadwinner, but when your whole identity is in how successful am I? What is my social standing? Whose house is bigger than mine? I need to be better than them. Who can I beat in a fight? Who's better looking than me? It's actually insecurity amplified. It's like the modern caveman gone out of control, wearing a suit or even in a president position, essentially. And instead of needing to bash another caveman over the head with a club, he can now do it with one push of a button with nuclear warfare. So what I see is a world run by men who have the father wound. There is a lot of cleverness, but no wisdom, no sense of oneness, still a large sense of separation. And what that's coming from is the man who grew up with a lot of criticism and very little physical or verbal affection from his father, never hearing the words, "You're good enough. Son, I love you." So then there's a deep void left in him that says, if my own father, the guy who brought me into this world and is my protector, is making me out to be a piece of shit, basically, and wow, I must be utterly worthless. But deep down, every man as a young boy, what he wanted more than anything was his father's approval. He wanted his father's words, "Son, you're enough." And the more he didn't get that, the more he had to prove himself, or if his father was just absent, just left at a young age, he genuinely feels that his identity is shattered and broken. And that void, he goes through his entire life with that void, which is the victim consciousness you were talking about earlier, one form of victim consciousness, but he doesn't know it. He's forgotten. It's like the fish. If you tell the fish you're wet, and it's like, what are you talking about? You tell the man you're wounded, what are you talking about? I'm successful. I've got a $1 million business. I've got the wife. I've got the car. I've got the house, whatever it is. I believe most of society is just decorating their trauma, decorating their emotional wounds with success. And then it shows after a while when they're unfulfilled and burnt out. So that's a common form of the father wound. It's a consistent sense of needing to prove myself, that he can't sit here without feeling guilty and restless. He can't be present and enjoy the beauty of this moment right now without needing to prove something or search for some problem. And the way that translates into his relationship with his woman is very defensive. And he becomes a taker. He becomes a taker because he wants her to soothe his unmet needs for respect, recognition, and love, the love that he didn't get from his father and typically his mother too. And so what happens to the woman is she ends up absolutely depleted because she is filtering her words. She's thinking about him and thinking, how can I keep him warm and feeling safe and feeling loved? She's thinking about him in 1,000 ways, but all it takes is for her to say, "Baby, I feel like you don't spend much time for me and with me." And he can just explode from that, or he can become like looking at her like she's an enemy that doesn't appreciate me. "What about all this hard work that I'm doing? You don't see my hard work. You don't see what I'm doing. You're ungrateful." And it's a lose-lose situation for the woman who ends up with him. That's one common style of the father wound in men.
Yeah. And I would imagine that because boys, generally speaking, in modern society don't have initiations like they used to into manhood, that's another kind of challenge that they face, is coming into that initiation on their own. If it wasn't provided by their father in the household socially, how is it even provided, right? So we find ways to do that. You know, join the military, join a gym, you know, join different things, you know, brotherhoods of some kind to try to access that. And it's hard to find healthy modes of initiation. And so with women who have a father wound, which many of us do, I would say, how does that show up for her?
Yeah, there's two main ways that keep showing up. From what I see, the first one is that if her father was very much like the type of man I just described, who's working hard and he's emotionally volatile And there's a sense of fear when he steps in the house. And she, that male behavior becomes her blueprint for what is a real man. And what she ends up doing as a little girl is, initially she knows, okay, dad's not safe, like something's off, but he's the only man I've got, is my first male masculine role model. And so there's a bit of a twisted thing that happens, because deep down she knows he's unsafe, but at the same time she wants to actually protect his image because it's her father. And so when you put those two things together, you get this complex where it's like, what I'm looking for in love now is the man who I know is actually emotionally absent and probably hurt in some way and probably will shatter my heart long term. But I just want to be with that guy because he feels like home. He reminds me of what is familiar. And bonus, if I can change him and get him to love me, it means it's the equivalent to finally getting the love from my father. So that's one style. And that type of woman ends up as the empath, the people pleaser. She feels guilty to say no. She's used to not really expressing her truth. She's used to silencing her needs to keep the peace. And she's used to being very hypervigilant and monitoring the state of the man all the time, really expecting an explosion or abandonment or some kind of maybe infidelity. So it's really a destructive blueprint to live with. The thing she gets from that is that the physical safety is big, though, because he has that protective element. That's in the initial stages, that almost, not almost, it does kind of quell all the fears that she has, because he'll show his protective, loving side initially. Yeah.
Right, right. And, you know, if she's weighing the options, it seems like that might be, the glimpses of that feel big enough to ignore the rest of the lack of safety. And would you say that in her hypervigilance and tactics in responding to his behavior, she starts to believe that she's like skilled at other things in life? Because I find that when women develop these skills, they say, like, you know, I'm really good at reading the room. I'm really good at predicting things. I'm really good at micromanaging things around the house. Like, it becomes like this almost, I would say, skill set that is a trauma response, but now she's found ways to make it work for her rather than addressing the root cause of why she's now doing this behavior. For some women, I find that they become really hyper independent and they know how to do things out in the world and they can take charge here and take charge there because there's never been safety at home. So they have to provide all of that for themselves.
No, that's exactly it. Yeah. That's the second type of common father wound I see in the woman who becomes masculinized. And so what I mean by masculinized is the masculine energy of dad that hurts her so much or that wasn't there at all, she will take that into herself as a piece of armor, becoming very competitive, become the decisive controlling person, become very, very career oriented, because just like the man with a father wound, the more achievements I get, the bigger of a person I become. That's unfortunately the illusion that they fall for, and they don't understand that they're stressfully chasing a phantom carrot, basically, that they'll never get to, and that what they're really trying to do is inflate their mental sense of self to cover the wounded self underneath the emotions of neglect and being deprived of respect and affection. So that type of woman, yeah, for her, the path of girl boss or boss bitch or whatever term you want to use for it, that becomes super appealing because that's like the ultimate platinum diamond armor. Yeah, so that's quite common as well. And that type of woman will typically attract a man who has the feminine energies that she's disowned in herself, because she thinks that to be sweet, nurturing, submissive, which really means receptive and cooperative, she associates those things with weakness. And they're the most beautiful and empowering things if they're used consciously.
Yeah, it's that the receptivity is huge. It's huge. I see it a lot because there are a lot of female entrepreneurs that I know personally and that I've worked with, trying to find that balance and realizing that so much of what's gotten them to where they are has been a trauma response, you know? And so I don't know what this looks like, because there's also the mother wound, right? Because like you mentioned earlier in our conversation, when a woman expresses, you know, emotion, desire, preference, or, you know, saying, I would love this, the man sometimes takes it as, oh, you would love that because it's different than the thing I'm offering you right now. And there's like a trigger of some, you know, would you say that that is how the mother wound manifests? Or is the mother wound just a man who is constantly trying to please his partner? Because I feel like there's two options of how this mother wound can manifest in men.
Yeah, like I said, they're really umbrella terms, and they can vary massively. So I'm just talking about the common ones. For example, there's a man working with me right now who is a blend. Like he's super successful, millionaire and all of that, multi-gym chain owner. But he keeps attracting women who use him, female narcissists who lie to him and have like multiple male orbiters around them who she's dating and cheating on him with, and he finds himself wanting to win her over and change her. And the reason for that is that his mother was that very critical narcissistic type with him. So he turned out then to believe that to win my mother's love, I have to just submit to a woman's will. And that gets taken to the extreme. The woman says, okay, I'll move in with you, but I'm not spending New Year's with you. I'm going to go with another guy. And he actually accepts that because that's his norm, unfortunately, due to his wounding. And then slowly he realizes, okay, I think something's going wrong. Maybe I don't have boundaries. Maybe I'm not actually respecting myself, you know? And that's when he saw my video about mother wounded men and reached out to work with me. And then another common one is the guy that just becomes the typical nice guy that actually has lost all masculinity about him, and he's super agreeable. He can't assert himself in any way. There's no strength left about him. And that's why you'll get girls saying sometimes that he gives me the ick, or, you know, I got friend zoned or something like that. Because a woman can sense that he's disowned something in him that's primal and very important. And I don't like that. I don't feel safe with that. So there's all sorts that can happen.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a wide spectrum of combinations, and, you know, depending on when love was lost in childhood and by which parent, and, you know, because events happen that cause adults in our family to disconnect, and maybe they were connected for a point and then something shifts, or a family becomes blended, a step parent comes in, and, you know, there's so much that can happen. You mentioned a phrase, and this seems kind of relevant at this point, male orbiters. I've had this conversation with a few girlfriends and clients as well about, you know, the kind of like an audience, maybe female and male, right? And really, this gray area of like, you know, is this cheating? Is this not cheating? You know, requiring an audience to fulfill. And, you know, I know that a partner can't be the entire village for someone, right? They can't meet all the needs. But at what point, you know, would you say is there has to be a boundary here? Could you talk a little bit more about these orbiters and what that looks like and why people would require orbiters?
Yes. So that's not something that I've looked into too much. I just sense here and there when a client brings it up, it's not a field that I would say is my expertise. But from the few cases I've looked at, to me, what's clear is that if you're building a relationship with someone and you have, let's talk about the lady in the example before. It was very clear that he wants to be exclusive with her and she's saying, I want the same, but I'm going to spend New Year's with this guy, and there's been a history of attraction between us. Yeah, that's very, very dishonest behavior, and it's coming from insecurity. I see that as a clear trauma response, because you're avoiding true vulnerability and deep connection with the person that you say you want it with. So from what I've seen so far, we keep orbiters to prevent us from going all in with somebody. Why would we want to prevent ourselves from going all in with one person? Because we think we're going to get hurt, or we think we're not worthy of love. So our mind has very clever mechanisms to put installments and measures in place to ensure that we don't go all the way. Because if we go all the way, well, remember what mom did 30 years ago, or dad abandoned us, it's going to happen again. And these layers are so deeply buried that we don't actually know why we're doing it. I've never been a person to keep orbiters myself, but I have had avoidant tendencies, and I've studied that a lot in myself. And I know that we put very clever mechanisms in place to prevent us from going deep from one person. So the hookup culture is a huge remedy for people with wounds, because it means you can swipe, you can hook up with someone who has nice body parts that have yanked you in by your sex drive, and then you can have these surface level interactions. You can get a hit of validation that, look at me, I'm desired, and look what I can do. I can bring this person home or whatever, or keep them as an orbiter. So there's a sense of mental validation that keeps you hooked. But most people don't realize that at the deepest level, you're running away from pain.
And so if someone is noticing a pattern in their life, right, they're like, I'm kind of fed up with myself, like I'm sick of my own shit, right? Someone might get to that point. Where would they begin? How would they begin? What would you say is that first step for someone to take? Because I know that it's like you kind of have to pick your pain, right? Because it's painful to stay in the pattern, right? And it's maybe even more painful to go into the work of disabusing ourselves from the pattern, disrupting the pattern. But what would be that first step to take for someone?
I see it as definitely more painful to stay in the pattern of whatever your trauma response is, because although it tends to give you short-term hits of dopamine, after 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, that sense of regret starts to build up. What am I doing with my life? And nothing hurts more than that, because you can't get that time back. So doing that deep work now is worth it 5,000 times over. And so how does a person start? Well, what is the pattern that's destroying me right now? What is the pattern exactly? Identify it. And sitting with yourself in silence and taming your urges, your bodily urges, is the way. That is definitely the way. I really enjoy the teachings of Dr. Joe Dispenza, because he says the same thing. That's how I started on the path myself, sat in the bedroom looking at the wall. I said, instead of going out and giving in to my urges and blaming people, I'm going to sit with myself and see what comes up. And under the noise of the mind, when you can start to feel into what's happening in your body, in your biology, you sense horrible things. There'll be a void of pain, there'll be heartache, there'll be sickness in the stomach of how unworthy you feel. There'll be tension in the lower back from all the resentment you have for your mother. There'll be tension in your groins from this and that. And slowly over time, you start to do what I call body mapping, which is you start to learn which frequencies of pain live in exactly which parts of the body. So for example, heartbreak and a sense of neglect tend to be always very strong in the heart. Neglect and sadness in the heart. Anger tends to be in the solar plexus and gut. Shame can be the lower back and the thighs and the groins. So you start by getting in touch with these frequencies or these emotions that are embedded into your biology, and you learn to release them. And this is now the difference between just intellectual knowing. So it really doesn't matter how many PhDs or books you have and have read. If you can't shift that energy out of your body, you're going to walk around with a head full of knowledge, but really not knowing much at all, because you haven't released the weight from your body energetically. You can't smile. There's no sparkle in your eyes, and you can't sense the aliveness of life because you're too heavy. So you have to be able to shed that energy from the body. And the way that's physically done, the way I've done it, is breath work. and dropping your attention from your head, because we tend to be up here, if you just drop your attention into any body part and sit there long enough, it's just incredible. It's like exploring a whole world down there. And then you sense the emotional field and you feel it long enough. And what happens is tears just come. Energy just wants to move. It's just been stuck there since you were five, when your mom told you to shut up, or you had heartache because your dad left. It's just been lodged in your body and it just wants to be dislodged. And I kid you not, I see moments every day of my life, people who are 70 years of age down to 17 years of age saying, oh, like it's just gone. 30 years of pain or 10 years of pain just gone. I feel so light, and they can't stop smiling.
Yeah, we're holding it in our fascia. I mean, that's why sometimes even with body work, we'll have these really deep emotional releases that we weren't expecting or planning for. There's enough safety in my system to allow these things to offload. I would say that's a lot of the work that seems to be in the zeitgeist at the moment, is like, I'm stepping into self-love. I'm choosing the things that bring me joy and peace. I'm choosing to be my own safety. I'm choosing to accept the hand which was dealt to me. I'm choosing to accept my parents. I'm no longer able to blame anyone, because blaming them, just, I have to work so hard physically to hold the blame that, you know, I'm done. I'm tired, you know? And so, yeah, it's fascinating, because there's so many, you know, websites and apps like BetterHelp, and this is not an ad, by the way, I'm just saying, like, there's so many apps that make it possible to feel like I just have that person right around the corner constantly to help me. Or so, even AI, if you type, like, one of my clients was miscarrying recently, and she went into AI to search, like, what do I do? And it started interacting with her. It was like, well, I'm sorry you feel this way. Have you spoken with your midwife? Like, it was responding to her, like, you know, and I'm thinking, again, this is like needing to connect with an outside source in order to find safety in our own system. How do we cultivate the safety in our own system so that no matter where we are, whatever room we step in, whatever situation we step in, a trigger activate something, how do we do this internal process, you know? And I'd say that kids are not taught how to do that, right? I mean, it's like you have an emotion, it's like, go to your room until you calm down and then you can come out, or, you know, whatever. It's different for boys and girls. You know, I know the way that, like, my brother was spoken to versus how I was spoken to, and it was like two different parents. It's like, you know, because of him being a male. And so, how can we reteach ourselves to find safety in our system?
When you silence your mind, what you'll find is that your opinion on things dissolves. Because to have an opinion, you have to formulate a thought that he shouldn't have spoken to me that way. She shouldn't have done this. This should be better. And so the first thing that I always teach to my clients, and what I always turn to, is silence. Because when you don't have an opinion that something's right or wrong, or that you've been wronged, the thought, which is powerful enough to create victim consciousness, disappears. So when that part disappears, now you're no longer empowering that sense of victimhood in yourself. So that's one half of the equation gone. So then what you've got left is, you may have enormous libraries of victim consciousness emotions in your body. That's fine. We can deal with that. But what we don't want to do is add more to the damn thing. So we just don't want to add more to it. Please, for God's sake, there's enough there. There's decades worth and more. So you silence your mind, you start to feel into, okay, my heart rate is high, my palms are sweating here. You learn to use the breath and feel. See, when you feel movement of breath, you don't think movement of breath, you literally feel movement of breath. And if you feel over and over and your mind is just blank, there's safety there, because you're not thinking that there's non-safety there. Often non-safety is just the thought that there's non-safety. A quick example, so many things have gone wrong for me in London. My tenancy, I remember that I had like a brutal COVID attack, and there was something like 6 weeks before my rental tenancy was ending. And my landlady at the time was like, okay, I understand, no problem. I'll give you a few days. And then next thing I know, she's sending me this like threatening mail through the post to evict me, and having her agents call me and multiple times email me, even though I had been so kind to her the whole time and looked after the place like it was mine. And I remember in that moment smiling, because all I could sense was her anxiety that this guy is trying to pull a fast one on me. He's going to do something to my apartment. Whereas the old me would have been like, oh my God, she's disrespecting me. She's mistreating me. And I saw so clearly how our own mind can just create trauma on the spot by formulating a story about what's happening. So in the state of silence, instead of formulating a story about what was happening, I could sense the energy of her, that where she's coming from. And I didn't make, my mind just didn't make an enemy of it. I said, okay, it is what it is. But for most people, it was like, how can she do that to you? Blah, blah, blah. So the state of silence does wonders for you in so many ways, because you have access to your own emotional reservoirs and you don't add more trauma to the trauma that's already there. After you've spent a lot of time mastering that part or getting very good at it, it's how good can you become at sensing what's in your body, the heaviness, the lethargy. And as you release more wells of heaviness and grief, your energy levels go up. You start to see things stress you less, they trigger you less, you're more vibrant in general.
Yeah, that lethargy you mentioned is so real. And I see it, you know, in many of my clients who are in a challenging situation with their relationships, you know, in their pregnancy, or, you know, with their family, having opinions about how they should birth or not birth or whatever it is, you know, in my case, and they'll lose energy, you know, they'll lose that gusto, so to speak. And once they start saying, well, oh, I realize that this is my mother-in-law's projection. She had a very traumatic birth. And so she sees me pregnant, and all she can think of and feel is that response to her experience 30 years ago. So of course she's telling me I have to do this or I have to do that. And, you know, that's what we work on, is like putting the smile on the face and saying, actually, this is someone else's experience, and I choose to leave it with them, right? And I see their energy go up, that sparkle in the eye, so to speak, and this expanded energy field, you know. And that also comes with boundaries, right? Where it's like, I'm not available to receive that from you right now. I mean, in the case of your landlord, right? It's like, well, I'm just deciding internally I'm not available to receive her anxious energy, and I'll take a different action, right? It's about taking action. But we can draw the boundaries without having to have confrontations. We can just decide internally that the dance is done.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, and boundaries is a big thing. I'm sure that this, or I'm guessing it comes up in your work a lot, is just how one's life can change when boundaries are enlisted within our own nervous system.
What came in my personal journey after realizing I didn't feel safe in my family home, I made it a sanctuary in my bedroom where I would do the meditation. And I realized I got to get out of here, because I want a field of peace and silence around me. I don't want this to be only in my bedroom. I want, you know, it became the driver for me to go out. And boundaries can be taken too far as well, because that added to my avoidant mixture, where it was like, okay, I'm going to get so far away now from my family that my boundaries can't be crossed. And I realized I was also started avoiding deep connection. So that's been an incredible experience to see that not all boundaries are good, because you're keeping yourself from the light of the world as well. But good boundaries are, I would say, just the minimum that's necessary for you to restore yourself and replenish yourself. That's how I would say it. And it comes with triggering family members and being called selfish, or being called, you'll be seen as the black sheep of the family when you're breaking these generational curses. You'll be seen as different. And that comes with the territory. I was just speaking with my own family about this very recently and having some really beautiful conversations, because when you become aware of patterns of the past, of control, narcissism, neglect, manipulation, and you decide to speak up, it actually feels heartbreaking for them, because they're in that kind of consciousness where they genuinely don't see anything, that anything's wrong with that. So they might say things like, you don't want me to be human anymore, or you're trying to be pushed too much on me. And there has been times where I was pushing too much because I'm coming from some unhealed anger from somewhere about the past. So it's tricky territory managing them. But I always come down to this, how light do you feel in any given moment? It's not about trying to be light all the time and be happy all the time. It's not that. It's just use that as a measurement tool. So if you're laying a boundary, but there's so much bitterness and resentment in you, you have a lot of work. It's not just not the boundary that's going to do it. There's something in you that you have to heal and see, can I now get closer? If I'm truly healed, can I get closer to this family member who did piss me off in the past? And can I have genuine compassion for their level of consciousness right now and bring in my love and see if I can uplift them at a pace that's safe for me? And that's much, much deeper work that comes after laying those initial boundaries. But I wanted to add that in because it breaks my heart when I see this culture that says just cut them off, or, you know, no contact. When you cut someone off, you cut yourself off, because we're all one. You cannot cut anyone off without feeling like you've cut a part of yourself off. It's impossible. It always feels good to come back with a full heart and lift up the person who did wound you.
To piggyback on that initial boundary, right, where it's like, we've never done it before, so we just, you know, we block, we no contact, all of that. It might be the only way we know how, because it's the first time we're ever drawing a boundary, and we don't have the capacity, the languaging, the nervous system capacity to have conversations.
Yeah, you're just in panic.
So maybe it's just the first stage, but then eventually there's accountability where you say, I'm available to interact with you this way, but my nervous system can't handle these other types of interactions. So like, where does that leave us? Right. That's a conversation to have perhaps with someone, you know, and it's different in every situation, but yeah, I mean, I'm quite familiar with the ghosting. You know, for me, when I first started to learn to draw boundaries with my family, it was like, I can't speak for 3 months, no contact, you know, because I couldn't handle conversation. And it took time. It took time and a mastering of my own system, which is like a lifelong journey. I saw something recently online that was like, what stage of healing are you in? And it's like 12 stages, where it's like, you know, it's kind of describing what we're talking about here. And we get to this final stage when we realize there's no end point. It's like that fulfillment and that peace and that bliss is a choice every day. You know, and you said, like, with work, it's like maybe a stress level one. And then with relationship, maybe it's somewhere more in the middle of the spectrum. And it's a choice every day how you're going to access that fulfillment and how to not engage with the victim consciousness, right? It's a choice that we make. It's a total reprogramming that we're doing all the time. And so this was actually a question that I had for earlier, but I mean, I'm sure you see this, it's in your algorithm too, because of the work you do. There's constant talk about narcissism online. Like, it's just everywhere. And I'm like, did everyone just learn this word like in the last year? Because it's flooded, you know, all platforms. And I spoke with a psychologist recently who's a friend of mine. And she said, you know, we all agree, like my colleagues and I, that narcissism is something that forms in childhood. It's a part of the brain that never gets nurtured and developed. And so you grow into adulthood unable to access empathy. And it's just, you know, the family has to learn to deal with the narcissist. That's the only way. There is no coming out of that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then other, you know, everyone has their opinion. And I heard you say, I don't remember which platform it was, but you had said like you came from these types of tendencies where you might have been classified as a narcissist, right?
Yeah.
And so do you agree with that? Or, I mean, would you say that you've stepped out of that, or that you are just now comfortable with that part of yourself and you've just chosen to make different decisions on a daily basis?
Absolutely. I would say I was a heavy narcissist. I feel that it's an extremely misunderstood subject.
Right.
if I can just start with the roots of it, the mistake that we're making in our modern times, which conventional psychologists are propagating, there are some evolutionary psychologists that are now looking in the right direction, but it's still not enough. Because what we're doing is we're waking up in the year 2024 or 2025, wherever we are, when we start using these labels, and we're like, okay, here I am in this day and age. I look around me and I see narcissists. Okay, I'm going to use this label, narcissist. This guy, all he can think about is his self-image. He wants to be successful. He wants the trophy wife, and he doesn't have empathy. It's just me, me, me. Okay, narcissist. And you see, that's a very limited and ignorant way to come to a conclusion, because you just came to this world now, but this person that you're calling a narcissist, their body carries the memory of 1,000 and beyond generations of humans before them. So these tendencies did not just spring up today. They came from, see, I go as far as saying that we wouldn't be alive if it were not for narcissistic tendencies. Today, if World War III broke out, okay, God forbid, but let's say, and society went into anarchy, and there's people looting, thieving, raping, which I'm just going to be very honest, that would happen because there's trauma bursting from every corner of society. We'll return to our animalistic ways in 2 seconds. Then you'll see all these things about emotional safety and regulation gone out the window in 2 damn seconds. And the man that can slit another man's throat for you and walk into fire just so that you don't burn, that's the one you'll want, because you will die otherwise, as a woman especially. But even as a man, you want that kind of man around you. And that's what we call the narcissist. The man who is the expert survivor, clever enough to outwit the other tribesmen, strong enough to beat the bear. All of these things where he had to numb his, like, empathy, emotion. Why would I want that? Or what I want is my blade, my fist, and my muscles and my fitness. And I can feel that primal part in every man, including myself. I'm just conscious of it now. In the way society is now, those tendencies are becoming increasingly a disadvantage and increasingly cruel. That's the thing. So it's only because the needs of humanity have changed do we suddenly come in the year 2025 and slap that label on and say, yeah, narcissist. This is a cruel way to look at it, that the people's shoulders who we stood on to come here, we're doing that. It's unfortunate. It comes from misunderstanding. So my work, and I'm working very hard on this, is managing to tap into those men who have those tendencies in a way that doesn't trigger their defenses, gives them empathy. I have one YouTube video, a long one called The Man with a Mother Wound, just one. It's 30 minutes long. And the amount of male clients that have come to me through that, who said, I've been sobbing when I heard that, because it's like the first time someone is seeing them in their wounds and not just saying emotionally unavailable, triggered, wounded, traumatized. I'm understanding the actual roots, and they feel so seen that they look at me like I'm a god or something, like, how did you know this? When those roots can be understood, not just mentally, but energetically, which is done through meditation, everything changes, including the narcissist. They're like, okay, I see, this is exactly what I've been doing. And yeah, let's talk about these emotions. This emotional empathy stuff, let's do it. Let's try it out, because actually you're right. I don't like seeing my wife upset because I had a rage attack. And I don't like turning up to work every day where I feel like everyone's out to stab me in the back and I need to be better than the guy next to me. It's tiring.
Yeah, the survival, this like cunning that we have to develop to survive, or we perceive we need to develop it to survive, you know?
Through modern psychology, we focus on the narcissism that shows up in relationships and the workplace and the parent bond and the sister bond. We focus on the micro, but almost nobody is looking at the macro, which is that the biggest threat to the entire world right now is concepts like war, deforestation, and AI. And those things are planetary narcissism. We've drawn imaginary lines into the earth and said, this piece of land belongs to me. Come near it, I'll shoot you down from the sky, or I'll, I'll send a bomb from miles away, whatever it is. I want more profits to make more burgers, so I'm going to cut down this chunk of the Amazon forest, which actually creates the oxygen for my lungs, so that I can profit from that land, and I'll displace the indigenous people at the same time. All that planetary narcissism, yeah, we don't need to talk about that. We'll just talk about the micro pieces that show in the home. So I think there's an enormous misunderstanding, and we're focusing on the wrong parts, but it's still good. We're bringing awareness into homes. I'm not saying it's not useful. I just want to see a lot more and a lot bigger scope come into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the individual perspective on how we conceive and how we birth and how we raise our children, but we're not often looking at the collective approach to birthing and parenting, which is, for me, the foundation of how we end up living our lives. Birth is a metaphor for how we live our life. And so, yes, we're talking more about, you know, disabusing the victim consciousness around being a mother, being a father, being husband, being a wife, but there is a bigger, bigger, massive piece at play. And like you mentioned, so, wow, this has been so beautiful. I could talk to you for hours. So, but thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story and alchemizing it to do this work and to help thousands and thousands of people everywhere, you know, just to come into more self-awareness and how we want to show up and how we want to expand, you know, into that peace and that tranquility. So
thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
So my Instagram is Essun_Anwar. And my website, www.essun.co.uk. And I also have my programs on there, which will help you to feel that peace and connect with the dormant energies of grief and heartache in the body.